Father's Day is coming up, and I wanted to offer something useful to dads who are tired of living a divided life. So I'm hosting a live workshop called Become a Better Leader by Becoming a Better Dad. Here's the core idea. We are not two different men, not a work self and a home self. We are one engine. And when there's a crack in how we lead at home, impatience, disconnection, reactivity, it shows up at work too, just in a different form. Because the real issue isn't our behavior. It's the patterns we fall back on when we don't have anything left. I call that version of us default dad. He's the one who shows up when we're tired, overloaded, or distracted. And while that pattern is easiest to spot at home, it affects our leadership everywhere. This workshop is a practical playbook to help you catch default dad earlier, lead with more intention under pressure, and become a calmer father and stronger leader. It's free. Consider it my Father's Day gift to dads. The link to register is in the show notes below, or visit ambitiousdads.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Ambitious Dads podcast. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Hittner, and I have a very special guest this week. This week, we have Mitchell Osmond, who he himself is very focused on supporting dads, leaders, men in general, and has his own sort of movement called Dad Nation. And I want to turn it over to you, Mitchell, to introduce yourself.
Yeah, a little bit about me. Well, first of all, thank you, Jeff, for having me on the show, man. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to having this conversation with your listeners. Just before you hit record, we had a lot of conversation about how many parallels there are in what we do and what we're passionate about. But yeah, for those of you who don't know me, so I have a movement called the Dad Nation, and then I lead a podcast. I have a podcast called the Dad Nation Podcast. And of course, I'm a coach as well. And really, where I spend my time is I help high-performing men or career-driven men reclaim their home, their health, and their happiness. And so a lot of what I talk about and what we'll get into today probably is some home health happiness is really, you know, your key relationships, your fitness, and then your overall mindset. And so in my experience, a lot of my clients and a lot of the time I talk with and to people who have seen success professionally and are very driven, very focused, but have found themselves struggling personally, you know, leading powerfully at work, but coming home and feeling powerless. And so that's a little bit about what I do.
I love it. Yes, that is very much who our audience is. And so I would love to hear a little bit of how you came to be so focused on fatherhood and working with leaders that really want to kind of fix this gap that they see between their professional life and their personal life.
Yeah, Jeff, that's a big question. A little bit of my origin story, because I tell you this, I don't have it figured out, number one, but I certainly have learned some things over the past few years because I definitely didn't have it figured out. Growing up. So people always want to know what was the turning point? What was your transformation moment, your catalytic moment, you know, you name it. And so, you know, for me, there was really two key points, right? One was a fight and one was a funeral. So let me kind of walk you through it. The first one was a fight. And so I want you to picture me and my wife were sitting on the couch in our living room and it all hit the fan. And we started fighting. I believe it was over money and that morphed into something else and something else. And if you're in a relationship, you know exactly what I'm talking about, how those things go. But, you know, at this point, we had been married for about 3 years. And, you know, it was a hard 3 years. We struggled a lot in our first 3 years of marriage. But this day, this fight was, in my opinion, our rock bottom moment because we had the fight and the consensus coming out of this was, if we don't figure this out, we're done, you know? And so I knew that deep down, if something didn't change, this was going to be over. And so to give you some more context, you know, I was recently let go of a senior leadership position. And as men, man, our career is everything. We wrap our calling into it, our identity, you know? So I started to spiral into what I now know was depression. I was 60 pounds overweight. We were about $100,000 in debt. I was medicating with drugs, with alcohol to sort of cope with where I was at in life. I was checked out, stressed out, burned out, you know? And the thing was, is I had seen success professionally in growing organizations and leadership and building teams, but I just couldn't seem to figure out my life personally. And I would ask myself, why is it I'm so powerful at work, but I'm powerless at home? Maybe your listeners have been there, you know? And to take it back even more, you know, growing up, I came from a bit of a dysfunctional, very dysfunctional upbringing. You know, my father was an alcoholic, drugs, crime was littered throughout our home. And I was kind of caught in the middle of it all, you know? So I knew where I came from and I knew that I wanted something different for my life and for my family, but I could feel myself getting pulled back into the trauma of my past, Jeff, and like making the same mistakes my family had made. When I would yell at my wife, like I would hear my dad's voice in mine, and I hated it, but I couldn't stop it. And at times I felt like I was two people trapped in the same body. And like I said, I could lead board meetings, you know, but when I came home, I didn't know how to talk to my own wife. Like there was this duality that was kind of tearing me apart. And so that was the first moment where I was like, whoa, I'm about to lose everything if I don't figure this out. A week later was the funeral, the second part of my turning point. And I was invited to sing at the funeral of this wealthy philanthropic man. And after hearing the beautiful life that this man had led, the minister challenged the attendees. And he asked them a question. He said, are you living a life worthy of imitation? If you were to die tomorrow, would you be proud of the legacy that you left? And Jeff, man, as I began to try and sing the last few lyrics, I could barely choke them out, because all I could think was, if this was my memorial service, nobody would be saying he inspired me to have an amazing marriage. Nobody would be saying he inspired me to get into shape, or he inspired me how to grow my wealth or anything like that. They probably would say he struggled a lot and then it was over. And it was sad. So by the time I packed up that and left the service, I was determined that I would rewrite my story, right? Because the first chapter of my story was my childhood, and that was honestly kind of a sad story. The second chapter was my marriage, and that was a struggle. And so right there and then, I committed to write a new story, not just for me, but for my wife and my kids. And it sounds intense, but I knew that I needed to die to the man that I once was in order to become the man I knew I needed to be for my family. And so I realized that, you know, and this is Einstein's old definition of insanity, right? You keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. I needed to learn how to make different decisions. I needed to learn how to think differently, right? To change my mind. And so I surrounded myself, man, with men. I reached out and I surrounded myself with men who were living where I wanted to go. You know, men who my ceiling was their floor. These men taught me everything I needed to know in order to, you know, see healing and recover in the ways that I needed it. And so Jeff, within a year and a half or 18 months, we had paid off over $100,000 of debt, completely restored our marriage. I had lost the 60 pounds, was lean and strong and confident and clean of substances and distractions, man. I was focused and confident. And that, I mean, why is that transformation important? I think, you know, it was important for me because I realized that day that I could have all the wealth and all the influence in the world, but if I was going to be sitting around the Christmas tree alone this year, what would be the point? You know, more importantly, you know, for my family, we've all heard of generational cycles, right? And we know that statistically speaking, there's a high probability that our children will adopt our behaviors and our lifestyle patterns. And so if I wanted my son to be a great man one day, like I know he's going to turn out like me, because our kids, you know, they won't always do what we say, but they'll always do what we do, right? And if I wanted to have a son to grow up to be a great man, I needed to model greatness for him so he could recognize it when he sees it in himself. If I want my daughter to bring home a great husband one day, I need to model that for her so she knows how to see it, just recognize it, you know? And so, because I'm not raising kids, I'm raising adults. And I have to understand that. And that's the whole point. And so the generational cycle stops with me, Jeff, you know, and that's really what I'm passionate about at the end of the day. And my children will have my story to learn from so that they won't ever have to know what abuse and drugs and alcohol and crime look like in their family, because every family has a curse breaker, you know, and for me and my family, I'm the curse breaker and I'm committed to that. And so that's kind of my story, man. And what made me change it all around and then start to even have this conversation about helping other men.
So many things I want to ask about. First and foremost, thank you for sharing that. For most men, it's really difficult to ask for help. And, you know, I've been on several podcasts where people ask, what's your superpower? And I actually like to say asking for help, because I also know how rare it is. So when you had, you know, your rock bottom moment, right, that you talked about at the service, what was it like? How did you find those people that you said you sought after? And like, did you see a therapist? Like, what are the steps that you took? Because I am also still continuously meeting fathers, dads that are in need of a lot of role modeling and support, but still find it incredibly difficult to ask.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a great question. And I think for me, what gave me the strength to reach out, I think, was just the desperation of like, well, I know what I have been doing isn't working. You know, one of my mentors said, he's famous for asking, how's that working for you? Mm-hmm. So we tell ourselves lies all the time, right? Well, you know, I'm, you know, maybe my fitness. Well, I'm doing okay. I got on this plan. Well, how's that working for you? Are you actually losing the weight or you're not? Are you just kind of telling yourself you are, you know, whatever, right? Exactly. And so for me, I was like, okay, well, how is my life working for me so far? It's not. And so obviously the way I'm doing things is not working, because my level of thinking and my level of decision-making got me to where I am today. And true honesty will take you to that point. You know, you probably heard this in your spaces, but we are, you know, our lives are a direct result of the decisions that we've made over the past 3 to 5 years, you know? And so what decisions was I making 3 to 5 years ago? Well, actually it makes sense as to why I'm here. Now, if I want to be somewhere different in 3 to 5 years, I need to learn how to make different decisions and learn how to think differently. And so that was a big moment for me of like, what I'm doing is clearly not working. I'm being honest with myself about that. And then, you know, another part to the question there is, honestly, strategically, I just thought about people who I needed, were the areas I needed help in. So I thought, who has the best marriage of anyone I know? And who's in the best shape of anyone I know? Who has the most financial security of anyone I know? And I found 5 guys. And I reached out to them and I literally just said, hey man, you seem like you are just killing it. Like you seem like the ideal husband. Would you be willing to like grab a beer with me or grab a coffee just once a month and sit down and share with me, you know, what you've learned along the way? Cause I'm trying to get better, you know? And I think number one, that's a hugely powerful thing. And I've actually developed a framework around, I call it the Iron Five. All of my clients have their own Iron Five. It's like, yeah, there's a community piece to it all, but you also have to have an inner circle of guys who are holding you to the standard that you said you wanted for yourself. And, you know, we all know, you know, that old adage at this point, but it's, you know, your personality is a combination of the top 5 people you spend the most time with. So look around, you know, we're the byproduct of our environment. So if you want a different output, change your input. And so that's what I did, man. And that's how I got the courage to do it. And it was hugely transformational. Of course, there's a lot more to it than that. There's like a lot, you know, as you know, but that is one thing that was huge for me. And I would encourage, you know, listeners with this. The reason why we don't reach out is because we feel we don't want to burden someone, you know, or we feel like maybe if we're honest, there's a little bit too much pride or ego because we want to seem like we got it all unlocked, you know. And so I'll often ask people, when was the last time? Well, actually, in this process, I'll say, when was the last time somebody reached out to you for advice? And they'll tell me, and I say, how did that feel? And they're always like, actually felt good. It was kind of humbling. And I said, did you actually go out of your way to try and make time to meet with that person? And they were like, most of the time, they're like, yeah. So I said, well, what makes you think that you would be any different for someone who you might be reaching out to, right? Because no one ahead of you is going to criticize you for where you're trying to go because they understand how hard it is to get there. And so that same feeling you had is the same feeling that person's going to have when you reach out to them. You're not a burden, right? And I'll tell you what, the people behind you, who cares what they say? Because they're not going to be where you're going anyways. You know what I mean? And so don't hesitate to reach out because that feeling when someone reaches out to you, I mean, you're actually giving them an opportunity to be more fulfilled, to speak into your life. And that's powerful, right? But we don't do that because we don't have the courage for one reason or another.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And I love this idea of having what you call like your five, you know, role models around you covering the kind of the different areas, it sounds like, that you want to grow and excel at, which makes a lot of sense, an absolute lot of sense. Fantastic. So how about, let's fast forward a little bit. So this was about 3 years ago for you?
No, this would have been...
Or longer.
Yeah, this would have been 8 years ago.
Okay. And fast forward, you have a son and a daughter. How old are they now?
Just a son. I was saying when I have a daughter.
When you have a daughter. I love it.
The certainty language.
Yes. Yes. That always works.
Yeah. My son is 20 months old. So.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And what today is like the biggest struggle for you as a dad?
Yeah, man, for me, it's always been balancing ambition and being fully present, you know?
How does that play out?
Just being so driven to work and to build and to grow, you know, build a coaching practice, to build a podcast, you know, all those different things. That in conjunction with actually being really passionate about what I do and really believing in the mission. But then, you know, when I'm done work for the day, showing up at home just as present, you know? And so, you know, one of the turning points, another point earlier on in our marriage, you know, when I was working in other leadership positions before I was an entrepreneur, my wife said to me, she said, I feel like you go to work and you give everyone the Mitch buffet and you come home and you give me the scraps. And for me, that was another moment where I was like, man, I need to get this figured out because I must understand how to be present and to honor and cherish and love my wife and make her feel like I'm there, to not make her feel like I'm there, to actually be there. And so I think that's one thing that so many men struggle with, right? And so that's my biggest challenge even today. And I've got tools and systems around that. But at the end of the day, Jeff, that's why I started all this. It's selfish. Like my whole motive is selfish because I'm like, if I want to be a great husband or a great father, the only chance I got of that is by surrounding myself with other men and experts and learning from them. So I'm along for the ride because I learned so much, but I also get to help so many other men. But yeah, that's a real struggle, man. You know, just simply being where your feet are, wherever your feet are, be there. If your feet are in the living room with your kids, be there. Don't be on your feet.
So what practically do you do? Do you have any practices that you do for yourself when it comes to, you know, recognizing that you're not really present, even though you're sitting next to your kid, or you're not really present, even though you're at the dinner table with your spouse? Like what do you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. A couple things. So there's one practice that's, it's really a tool that can help you save yourself from yourself, but it's just a simple lockbox you can get on Amazon. Number one, set a timer on it, throw your phone in it, and it locks you out. And like, if I put it in at 7 p.m., you know, if I want to spend time with my wife and I lock it till 10, I actually can't get it out without smashing it. And I'm not going to do that because I pay money for it. That's a real simple thing. If you go on Amazon and just like look up like lockbox for phones or whatever. But another one is, which is what I call the preparation pause. And when guys get home from work, you know, the whole thing is to really just take 5 minutes before you go into the house, you know, sit in the car, And you're going to wrap up all these open loops, you know, wrap up the conversations, you know, send any last minute emails you need to send, and then take a couple minutes to do some deep breathing, you know, whether it's box breaths or 4-7-8, you know, you can look that up if you need to, but to just realign, to regulate yourself, right? So you close off all those open loops of communication, get that off of your mind. You do a couple, you know, deep breathing exercises, and then align yourself with your next mission, which is on the other side of that door. And you make a commitment that I'm going to show up powerfully when I walk through that door, because I have no idea what's waiting on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so often men are stressed out, right? They come, they get this big meeting or proposal, blah, 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 or this tension at work. And they come home and they just rush through the door because they feel like, well, I gotta get home to help my wife or whatever the case is. And they're in this dysregulated state. And then all of a sudden they walk in and their wife has had the kids and they're crazy. They're going crazy all day and she's stressed out. And then you come in and what's the first response? Whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't need this. I had a crazy day. Why is everyone freaking out? And you're adding to the chaos, right? But I encourage, you know, men to understand that sometimes your responsibility, well, I would say always, is to be the lowest heart rate in the room. So when you come in, you need to be the calm, that your presence is like the soothing balm for your family. And so that's why when you're in the garage or in your driveway, do some breathing, align yourself in the moment, get regulated and walk in. You know, ask yourself that question. When I walk through that door, what does it look like for me to be the calmest heartbeat in the room and to bring the energy down? Or maybe everyone is calm. Great. I could just get to add to that. And how do I be fully present? So those are a couple like simple things that I do and help people and encourage other men to do as well.
I love it. And now tell me what happens when it doesn't work. So when you do all those things and you still walk in, and maybe it's fine when you walk in, but you know, you're at the end of your day. So your emotional energy is spent as well. And you have a 20-month-old, so there's going to be plenty of meltdowns and your wife's going to be tired. And how does that situation play out, and how do you recover from that? Because that's part of one of the things that I've noticed through my research is that, you know, you talk about identity and for the first time ever, you know, men primarily are identifying as fathers, as like their primary identity, almost 92%. But when you ask about how confident they are in their fatherhood, only about a third feel like they're confident in what they're doing. So we have this huge self-confidence gap, right? And then, of course, parenting is literally an activity you will always be imperfect in. So you will always screw up. But it's those screw ups where we like spend extra time in our head being crazy frustrated. So what's that experience like for you? How do you get through that? What do you do? Maybe walk us through the most recent one, because we all have them.
Yeah, 100%, man. For me, it always takes me off guard. You know, it's when my guard is down, or, you know, maybe I have, it takes me off guard, or when I have really high expectations around how something should go.
Mm. High expectations because,
you know, maybe I woke up thinking that my day is going to look a certain way, or maybe high expectations of we're going to pack up and go on a vacation, or high expectations of what tonight is going to look like after we drive home after date night. Or high expectations of, you know, whatever, and they're uncommunicated. And when all of a sudden that expectation has not been communicated, but also not met, boom, you know, then you're like, wait a minute. I thought we were going to be out the door at 8 a.m. You know, I thought the drive was going to go just real smooth. We got to hit her.
It does with a toddler, right?
Or I thought, you know, we had wine, we went out, you know, we come home, everything's going good. I thought that meant, you know. And then, well, wait, what do you mean you're tired, right? So there's all these scenarios where you're like, you have these expectations. But the problem is when they're not communicated, it's impossible to meet them. But that, you know, that's one thing that I try and hold expectations very, very loosely. You know, I can have goals and hopes, but expectations are tough, you know. But, you know, the other point I was talking about, just taking you off guard, you know, for me, sometimes in the morning, me and my wife clash because I'm a morning person. She's not.
Right? Oh my God. I know exactly what that life is like entirely. Yeah.
So she will, she says like the only form of communication that's acceptable before 9 a.m. is hugs. That's it. Go talk to me.
And coffee.
Hugs and coffee. Yeah, for sure. Sorry, just going to read.
That's all right. I'm not playing sure. A little with the video.
Yeah, hold on a second.
So it's funny. I used to be told that every morning waking up next to me was like I had just won the lottery, which it wasn't meant as a compliment. It was meant as my energy state did not match their energy state. And it's taken me many years to like embrace that reality and truly get more aligned with what everyone else needs in the morning, not the energy level that I have in the morning. So I can really appreciate that. And so how is that evolved for you?
Yeah, well, kind of what I was saying there, we just had to learn how to communicate because I'm a morning person. So I'm up at like 5 a.m. every morning. And by the time she gets up, I'm like, all right, asking her questions about the budget, the plan, yes. Whatever.
Here's my to-do list. Here's what I'm thinking you need to take care of. Yep, I know that very well.
And she's like, what? What are you? I'm still waking up. And then the flip side, you know, it could be 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. She's coming to life and she's asking me all these deep questions. And I'm just like, babe, I'm comatose. Like, I don't have time. Or I'm thinking about that. Or she's bringing up some sensitive conversation. And I'm like, I literally don't have the capacity to have this conversation right now. And so that's usually for us when our arguments come up, right? And so understanding that, like, we actually now have windows where we're like, okay, I know that for me, I'm not going to bring up anything sensitive with her until like after, like in the afternoon, okay?
And how do you withstand that? Because we can all have that goal, and then it's like, you see this thing, maybe you're looking at their budget and you're like, what, where did that number come from? Where did that expense come? No, I will not ask that question until this. So how do you deal with that? Because that's your own emotional regulation there.
Yeah. So, I mean, going into that, I mean, it's really, there's a bit of a process that I go through. So back in the early days, I made up a rule. I'm like, I'm not going to talk about this for 24 hours, no matter what. And because a lot of times it's just emotions. And then if this is still bothering me after 24 hours, if it's 9 a.m. the next day and it's still bothering me, then let's talk about it. We'll find the right time. But it's usually like 90% of the time, man, it goes away. You know, so number one, right? But, you know, that's not always good enough, like, because, you know, we might think, oh, well, I'm going to wait 24 hours. But then you're in this dysregulated state.
Yeah.
You know, and that's hard to combat. So real simple. And a tool that I give my guys is to just understand that, you know, your emotions will often manifest physically first in your body, right? So a lot of guys will have certain tells, you know, so for me, I start rubbing my hands like this, you know, when I start getting a little bit dysregulated. Some guys start rubbing their forehead, shaking their knee, or maybe their chest feels tight or their head feels throbby. You know, you name it. And so having that conversation with your wife too, or your partner, and saying, what do you see in me when I start to, when it's on the verge of like, when I'm, you know, when that tension is rising physically, you know, and then you do a check in yourself and then have that conversation of like, okay, if you see me do this, I officially give you permission to just recognize it in the moment and give me space. Or if I recognize this in myself, this is going to be our sign. Okay. You know what? I'm just going to take, can I just take 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, whatever, because that's the first sign, these physical tells, right? So for me, when I start rubbing my hands together like that, my wife, we know each other well enough that she's like, hey, do you need, like, respectfully, you know, do you need to take some time because you're doing the thing, you know? And I'm like, yeah, actually I do. And the second thing is, we know that, you know, the prefrontal cortex on average takes about 14 minutes to sort of reset. And the reason why I say that is the prefrontal cortex is the part of your brain that's really responsible for empathy and thinking logically and reasonably and negotiating and all those different things. And so when you get dysregulated like that, that basically goes offline and you lose that ability to empathize and to think critically and to negotiate in a conversation. And so it's powerful. And that's why it feels so impossible to resist. There's been brain scans done on people who were in a highly dysregulated emotional state and compared to brain scans of someone in the middle of a manic episode, and they actually look very similar. So your brain is actually functioning like someone who's lost their mind, literally, in that moment. And so that's why it's so hard to avoid it. So what we do then is we say, okay, if it takes, you know, technically, if it takes 14 minutes, let's wait 28 minutes. Let's wait a half hour. And so for our, for us, it's like, okay, if I'm doing the thing, half hour break, I'm going to go do a little bit of breathing. I'm going to ask myself some questions. What part could I have had to play in this? What expectations did I not communicate? Was I loving, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But take time to kind of get back and get back regulated and then have your prefrontal cortex essentially come back online. And then all of a sudden, this is why like an hour after you have a fight, you're like, why did I say that? That wasn't even me. Why did I do that? Well, newsflash, it wasn't really you because that's not how you think. Typically. So this gives you the space to be able to prevent a big blow up, right? So the big thing is the physical triggers and then having that conversation before you have a fight, like when things are going good on a date night or whatever, talk to your partner and be like, hey, I want us to set up some systems. You know, James Clear says you don't rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems. And so a system is what you want to put in place so that if you fall, you just stumble a little bit, right? So having that conversation before things get heated. So that way, when you get to that point, you can have that conversation and be like, hey, remember when we talked about this? I think that moment is coming on. Could I like just grab 20 minutes and just come? Because I don't want to say something that, you know, might be hurtful or whatever. Does that make sense?
100%. We call it tagging out in my family.
Sure.
Where it's just like, you know what? And to be honest, it happens early on when I was, you know, going through my real emotional learning as a dad and realizing how dysregulated I was becoming when my kids were having a lot of temper tantrums. You know, my youngest, his temper tantrums could last 25, 30 minutes and I could hang in for like two of them. And as I started to like really seek ways to grow and understand first the triggers about it with me, but then like just how to maintain calm, it was like, okay, I got it to minute four. And then I was like, sorry, I just need to tag out because at this point, it's no longer going to be useful. And like over time that got better and better and I was able to stay tagged in. And so I really appreciate what you're talking about. And from like a relationship standpoint as well, I would add like working out is also really helpful, right? Especially if it's something that, you know, like really needs to find the right time for a conversation and, you know, working out will also help sort of re-regulate, right? The mind, but this is super thoughtful and really useful because we're all going through this crunch as dads that are ambitious, right? We're trying to do so much and manage so much at work, at home, with our relationships, with our health, with our kids. And then it's like, oh, on top of that, we need to add one extra layer of patience. You can't just respond when something is agitating you, right? And that, ironically, my wife used to call me out on that a lot when it came to like overhearing me with my clients and being like, some of those questions you just received were bonkers and you maintained complete calm. Why is that not possible when like we're going through something? And of course, to be honest, the answer was I wasn't nearly as emotionally invested in it, right? But I knew I was capable of doing it, which meant I needed to go through a process to, it's similar to what you're talking about, to get to that place where I could be that sort of patient human being. So I'm curious. So tell me a little bit about like, you know, with your 20-month-old, like what's going on there now? What's the biggest thing that's keeping you up at night when it comes to his life and your fatherhood?
Yeah, that's a question. That's a great question. No one's really asked me that lately. So, yeah, I mean, the thing for me is nothing has ever really sparked a desire to protect quite like having him, you know, understanding this need to protect him. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, you probably have felt it before, but as a father, but this feeling of, I think I wrestle with, what if I can't, you know, what if I can't protect him? What if he does something harmless or reckless, or what if somebody hurts him, or what if, you know, this fear of loss of control over that, you know, it really plays on my mind a little bit. Because, you know, as men, we often want to provide, we want to protect, and all those different things. And so it comes out of a place of obviously genuine care and love. But that's one. Somebody asked me a little while ago, what's your biggest fear? You know, becoming a father. And that was it. I think that something might happen and I can't protect him or fix it, you know, whatever. That's a tough one, man. But the things for me, yeah, the emotional regulation is huge. You know, when he's a tantrum and all those things, it's like, well, you know, I think it's important to understand that that's a skill that's developed. You got to be able to hang in that tension for a while. You're right. It's 2 minutes, it's 4 minutes, and it's 5 minutes. You might get to 10 minutes and jump back to 5 minutes, right? You lose one day. That's fine. The next day it might be back up to 10, but understand and have grace. You have to have grace with yourself and know that this is just a process. And it's like any other skill, like strengthening your muscles, like strengthening your relationships. I mean, they're strengthened through being tested over and over again. And I mean, that's so true for every kind of development and strength in life. And so we must understand that and be able to have grace for ourselves in the moment, because it's so easy to kick yourself like, man, I can't believe I lost it again. You know, well, over the course of 2 weeks, you know, did you keep your cool twice? Well, that's better than a month ago when you didn't keep your cool at all. That's a 20% improvement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So does that make sense?
100%. And so if I was asking you, right, if I was saying, coming to you for advice, like, hey, like this overwhelming desire to protect my son is creating its own problems and fears. Like, what advice would you give me? Right. Cause I feel like you know the advice to manage that fear. Not that it's easy, but I'm curious as to what advice you would give.
Yeah. So, the thing is, anxiety, you know, really comes from a lack of like a fear of loss of control, right? It's a projection into the future of like, whether it's finance, like anxiety around money, it's like, I don't have control over this thing in the future, or anxiety over a, you know, maybe a marriage that's not doing well, or you name it, right? And so the antidote to anxiety is action, right? Action alleviates anxiety. And so for me, in that situation, I ask myself, and I do this with anything that I'm anxious about. Okay, what can I control and what can I not control? Because if anxiety comes out of a fear of loss of control, then it's important to understand what I do have control over and what I don't have control over, so that I can release what's not in my control and I can really kind of cling to and take action on what I do have, you know, control over. And so I ask myself, is he safe financially? Is he safe emotionally? Is he safe physically? Is he safe relationally? Yes, 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 yes. Okay. All right. So is there anything to actually be worried about? No. You know, okay. So then why am I living as though there is something to be worried about? And then I extract that thought, right? So and this is a great, there is a series of questions that, you know, if your listeners are, if you struggle with believing lies or struggling with anxiety or whatever, anything like this, it's a series of five questions you can ask yourself, which will help you kind of debunk the lie. Number one is, what is the lie that you're believing, right? What's the lie? Or what is the thing that I'm believing? And so say, for example, it could be, maybe I'm not a good dad, right? Okay. That's question number one. What's the lie? What's the thing that I'm believing? What's the narrative? You know, the number two question is that true? And you might say, yeah, I think it's true. Or you might say no, and it stops there. But if you say, yeah, I think it's true, the third question is it, can you prove it to be true? Is it absolutely true? Well, that's where you check the lie, right? Check the facts. No, actually, has anyone ever said that I'm a bad dad or I'm a deadbeat? No. Okay. So then the next question is, well, why are you living as though it is? Why are my actions in alignment with living that, as if this thing was true if it's not, right? So then you ask yourself, you question that lie. I'm like, well, why am I anxious if I'm not actually a bad dad? You know, I'm not a deadbeat, or my son is not actually in danger. Then why am I living as though it is? And then the next question is, what is a greater truth than the lie that I'm believing? Okay, what's a greater truth, or what's something that's more true than that lie? Well, maybe that I'm a good dad, or I'm invested, or maybe he is safe, or maybe, you know, you fill in the blank. And then the last question is, well, what does it look like to live out of that truth, right? And so, well, what does that look like? Okay, well, it looks like, okay, I understand and I accept that I'm a good dad, and I give grace to myself when I struggle, and I keep moving on, you know, or whatever the case is, right? And so what that does, and you're going to like this, you know, as a mindset guy, is going back to these lies that we believe, we're extracting these narratives from our subconscious mind and we're analyzing them, right? And we're calling them out to be lies, the lies that they are. And then we're replacing that with the truth, the reality, and then actually giving yourself instructions on how to live out of that truth, and then essentially replanting that in your subconscious mind. And because of neuroplasticity, which we could get into another time, I mean, this is how we rewire the way we think. We question these narratives, right? And so that's one thing that's helped me in the past.
That makes a lot of sense. The challenge is for people to identify their negative self-talk, which is, it's another way to talk about it, or their fixed mindset. And for some people, that's easier than others. And for some, that's why they hire folks like you and I as coaches to help really work on that. I also love to dive beyond those five questions, just that challenge that too many ambitious dads are asking themselves, am I a good dad? And I noticed that this is part of the story that came up as I've been doing a lot of research around ambitious dads, is we put so much forethought and research into our work, right? Where we, like, if we're building a strategic plan, we interview our stakeholders, we do all our secondary research, we've got a team, we do X, Y, and Z. And then we want to be a great dad more than anything. And we're winging it a lot, right? There's not a lot of belief that I know what, like, the proper way to engage in this situation is, or I know that there is, you know, this flexibility between, or this balance between overprotecting and protecting too little as I see my child, like, crawl across the floor, right? And a lot of the dads that I have spoken to have come to this realization that that fear about not being a good dad is a little bit just because they, as you were talking, they haven't filled their brain with any other knowledge, right? They don't have a point of comparison. They haven't had a conversation with anybody about it yet. And so it's this continuation from, like, recognizing this is negative self-talk, right? Or this is the lie that I'm telling myself. But also, like, where is my baseline of understanding? Because I'm not talking to a bunch of other dads to figure out, like, if this is normal, if this is not normal. I haven't read a book on this yet, or I haven't done the work that makes me feel at ease like I do when it comes to work. Mm-hmm. And that's been an interesting challenge that's come up with a lot of the different fathers that I've had conversations with. So I really appreciate how you are calling out them identifying it at the first level. So that's great. Awesome. What else should I have asked you?
I don't know. I mean, it's your podcast, so whatever you think would serve your listeners most. But just to add on to your point, Jeff, I think a lot of people, a lot of men struggle in silence, number one. And we like to be the lone wolf, you know, but the lone wolf dies alone. You know, the strong wolves build packs. And so understand that you're not alone in the journey, right? That what you're feeling is normal. And there's actually a psychological term for this. Our inability to be comfortable talking about how we feel and open up is called normative male alexithymia. And you can you can Google it.
I couldn't spell that last word if you
alexithymia. Yeah. And really all it means is that psychologists have identified this in men it's both nurture and nature, but we struggle with talking about how we feel. We struggle even just with finding the words to speak. And then even if we did know what to say, we've been raised in a culture where it's not really socially acceptable to just talk to people about how you feel as men, right? Unfortunately. And we can talk about why and all those different things and how that stems back into even like World War II and the trauma and suppressing all these things and medicating and not necessarily having the tools and resources and them, those men raising men and not necessarily equipping them because they didn't have resources. And now here we are, not understanding how to talk about how we feel. And even if we did, not comfortable speaking to other men about it. And so we isolate ourselves. The problem with that is when we isolate ourselves, we think that we're the only one struggling with this and we begin to feel like a monster. And then the shame that comes from that, which then perpetuates this challenge to even reach out in the first place because you've made this big thing. You've made this little thing into a big thing because you have no, like you said, you have nothing to compare it to, no basis, right? And so understand if you're listening today that you're not alone. Every single time I meet my community of men, there's always one guy. It's like, are you serious? You struggle with that too? And then you can see a chain reaction. Well, you too? That's crazy. That was me. I thought I was the only one. And the freedom that comes from that when you can be around other men and actually be honest and open about the challenges you're facing is huge, man. So I would just encourage your listeners with that. No, you're not alone.
Awesome. Mitchell, this has been such a wonderful interview. If my listeners want to find out more about you and your work, where should they go?
Yeah, so a couple things, man. You can check out the Dad Nation podcast. Google that, you'll find it. Hit it up on YouTube. Check out the YouTube channel. I'm recently moving a lot of my audience into YouTube. So check that out. And of course, I've got coaching and programs and all that stuff too. You can just, you'd find it through the website on dadnationco.com. But for your listeners here today who are in a long-term relationship or who are married, I'd love to give them a free gift if that's okay with you.
Yes.
So it's just something that I call the connection code. Okay. And now this is 50 questions that you can ask your partner to spark the fun and bring the fire back in your marriage or your relationship. And the reason why this is so important is because men struggle, like we just said, you know, normative male alexithymia, we struggle with connecting on an emotional level. That's normal. But our wives don't typically. They have language, they have words, they're passionate about their emotions. And so that is often the way to our wives or our partners' hearts is through connecting with them emotionally. And these 50 questions are my favorite ones. It's free, download it. And then if you go on a date night or when you put the kids down, pour up a glass of wine, take two or three questions from this list and they're strategically designed to engage your wife on a different level and to unravel in conversation and connect with her on an emotional level. So I'll give you the link to download it for free in the show notes. You can put it in the show notes, but it's just dadnationco.com/code. You can find it on the website as well, but very powerful tool and something that's tactical and you can implement tonight, which is what we love as guys. So
awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for being vulnerable and thank you for being so wise in sharing everything that you did, and really look forward to engaging with you more often.
Jeff, thank you so much, man. You know, I'm reminded of the quote that says, time is the only currency that we spend without knowing the remaining balance. You know, we don't know how much time we have left, but we spend it all the time on different things. And so it's not lost on me about how important time is. So I really appreciate these 60 minutes, Jeff, we've had, and to your listeners for listening to this conversation. So thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.